I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is singer-songwriter Holly Lovell. Lovell's latest album, Hello Chelsea, explores a variety of themes, including addiction, family history, and grief. The songs were inspired by painful chapters in her family's life, and she says she suspects that the music will connect with others who have navigated through similar difficulties. We talked about grief, music as a healing force, and what she thinks may come next for her. That's on Into Music, coming up now. This, at the very least, seems like a record that has loss and change at its center. And I'm guessing that there were maybe some things that happen, and then after some time passes, you start writing about them, or were you writing about them in the thick of things?
I think I've been writing about this overarching story in my family's life my entire life. It's one of the main like subjects that got me into songwriting. So my uncle, it first started with my uncle is my mom's only brother, and they were super, super close when she was growing up. And then the more, you know, I got into my teen years, I watched her biggest heartache being like the loss of their friendship and the loss of him. And they stopped talking as much and just really grew apart. And it was always just really confusing and hard for her. And so as like a budding young 15-year-old songwriter, I really gravitated towards trying to like help her understand her feelings through writing. For her, like that's what music does for me, and I don't know, that must have just been my natural instinct was to do that. So I started writing about that story young, but then it all kind of came to a head when my uncle passed away from a drug overdose really suddenly, and I had already been in the middle of writing a song about a visit I had with him that was really confusing. I went out to help my grandma. He was living in New York at the time, and I went out with my grandma to help her find him because he had been put in hospital. And after that trip, I thought I was going to go there and tell him all about how much he was hurting my mom and my family and my grandma and me. And instead I went there and I like cared for him and made meals for him and came home and was just like, did I just like lose my nerve? Like why couldn't I tell him what his addiction and his lifestyle was doing to us? Instead, I just wanted to love him. And so I started writing a song, trying to process that, finished writing the song, and that same day found out that he had passed away. And so I think because I was already in it, I just like couldn't, it was my only way in, you know, to processing it.
You talked about when you kind of first started writing songs, this dynamic between your uncle and your mom being central, and that's and trying to, you know, you're saying I was trying to process and maybe help her through that. And so many times I just hear people talk about, you know, it's like, oh, I wanted to express myself. So this was like, you saw this as a potential like healing possibility maybe.
Yeah, I think like music is that way for me, has always been that way for me. You know, where I mean, everybody's an emotional person. I'm an emotional person, but I'm not a very like hard on my sleeve, cry in front of a bunch of people emotional person. So I think music helps me access that place in myself and really understand what I'm feeling. So, and I know that's true of my mom. So I think, yeah, that was my initial hope, was that like, I see music do that for her. I make music, can I give that to you? Or, and that idea of just like empathy and like even beyond empathy of like trying to put on somebody's life or experience and really feel what that feels like and then writing out of that place is really interesting to me.
I'm also interested in this visit that you had with your uncle, because I think it, you know, you had that question about, did I lose my nerve? And I think there's like that thing where the disease of addiction can be frustrating. And then we remember that there's that person who has the disease, which I suspect you know, I've definitely had that feeling where it's like, this is it. I'm going to tell that person. And then you're like, oh yeah, but this is another human being.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I felt that way a lot with him, and he's been the person I've been the closest to and been like the most directly impacted by his choices in that way. I've known other people with various addictions and things, but yeah, this has been the one that I've been the closest to the, you know, fire hose of like impact from. And I think over and over, as I was examining like his addiction, I kept coming back. There would be these moments of like anger, but I would keep coming back to that feeling of like, this is like a person. And I don't think he wanted to hurt us the way he was, you know? And so trying to look at it as like an object from all different sides and trying to really understand, there's like quite a few different songs on the record that look at his addiction through different lenses or different eyes or perspectives, just to try and understand it more as like a human thing.
Did you feel that you and he were connected in some way, like by personality traits or anything like that?
I don't know. I think maybe my like desire to understand him so deeply, I don't necessarily think there is some trait, which is that he was a performer. He was a singer. So I think that maybe was quite interesting to me. And he went to Belmont for musical theater. He was like top of his class, got all the leads. And then he went to New York to pursue Broadway and auditioned for a while. But then I think that I'm hazy on what the actual timeline is, because I wasn't actually involved in his life, but it seems as if his addiction maybe derailed him from his plan, because he at somewhere along the line just said like, yeah, it's not for me anymore. And he just kind of stopped doing music altogether. So that was always interesting. But I always wanted his approval, you know, music wise, because he was amazing at it and everybody always praised him for it. And I wanted that. So there's like little moments like that where I remember wanting his attention, being young, like I was in a talent show and I wanted him to come, and he wasn't going to come. And I was like, that's fine, whatever. And then at the end of my thing, I saw him in the back and I started crying on stage, which is like, I don't know, for some reason, something in me wanted his approval. And so I think, yeah, that's probably where a lot of my connection to him comes from.
I ask this because in my family, I had an uncle, my mom's youngest brother, who he was always kind of like, he'd show up about every 2 to 3 years. He was a musician. And as I started expressing interest in music, he was the poster child for don't do that because this is how you'll end up kind of thing, right? And then one year he started showing up more frequently and I was learning how to play guitar and he was showing me things and we had this incredible bond. And then he died. And it was like this, he drank himself to death. And it was like, you know, that same thing of like, well, the family was telling me about all this pain and suffering he caused, but he didn't cause pain and suffering to me. This is like one of the best positive relationships I had, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, this album hasn't even fully come out yet, but the more that I like will play shows or people will, the subject comes up, the more I find that like so many of us are living with a really similar thread of this story, of like a deep soul connection to somebody and then like losing them unexpectedly and just not understand, like it's that dichotomy like you're talking about of the person and the thing, the addiction or the whatever it is.
You had a lot of questions after his passing. And I think this is good because it, as much as I understand, you know, that like that model of like here are the stages of grief and stuff, I don't think that could ever encapsulate the full range of experiences we have. So I know in, you know, my own grief, it's like, yes, I have those stages, but then I have like sometimes, you know, kind of strange experiences where I'm like, what would that person have thought of this? Or why did that person make that choice for themselves or whatever? And it seems like you were exploring a lot of that.
Oh yeah. I explored a lot. I think The way the record goes is the first part of it is a lot of exploring memories of certain events before he passed away. So exploring a memory of, there's a song called If I Had It My Way, and it's like exploring this memory of, through the lens of my grandma and my mom, I wasn't even there, but exploring this memory of picking up my uncle from rehab in upstate New York and having to bring him back to the city. And they had asked the judge to change his parole to Colorado. And he had been like, yes, I cannot go back to the city. I got to get out. Take me to Colorado. And the judge wouldn't approve it and made his parole in New York City. And they had to take, they were court ordered to take him from rehab to his like parole home that he had to live in, like transition place, and say goodbye to him and leave, knowing that like, this is like the worst place for him to be, but we have to take him here. So exploring that kind of an like thing in his life, and boring, just some, yeah, just a lot of memories early on. And then transition point in the middle of the record is the song I was talking about writing before, on the day that I found out he passed away. It was called I Love You. And then everything after that is kind of the grief process, either through my own experience or looking at it through different lenses of my family.
If music has had this healing quality for you, and you see it, sounds like, for as a healing possibility for the audience, you still have to go through that process of moving forward to present it to people, finish writing things. Was there ever inclination with some of the material, like, oof, I don't know if I can dig down into this and come up with something?
I think I've had like a real mission with this whole thing. I think it's like, I've never wanted to shy away from any of it. I've wanted to just put my head down and go all the way in. It's really been important for me to do that. And I mean, I've been working on this for like 6 years now of like, from like writing it to then like recording it was a big milestone for me. Like it was a real setting it down kind of feeling. Like I felt like I like had just kept putting all these songs and stories in my, you know, knapsack. And then I carried them out to, I recorded it in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, carried it out to the woods basically, and like laid it down in this really like beautiful setting with trees all around, really like just organic feeling when recording. And that felt really powerful. But I think that there's probably more to go, that I think this next phase of playing these songs live for audiences and feeling that energy between me and the audience is going to maybe be the more difficult part of this, I think, for me, like emotionally, to be there again and again and again before an audience and to keep revisiting that thing. I think that's probably the more difficult part. The rest has felt like a process to get me there that I needed to go through. And then this next part, continuing to stay there and let it be present and raw for me so that others can feel it too. I've only played it a little bit, but every time I have, I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to be like another element I haven't explored yet.
I wonder about that a lot, just with songwriters in general, you know, where it's like, you know, let's say they have a song that's about the death of a parent or something, and that's the song that people really attach to because, of course, there's emotional truth in it and stuff. But then they got to relive that for 35 years, you know? So yeah.
I imagine it like comes in waves, you know? Sometimes you're super connected to the essence of the song, and other times you're more connected to the essence of a moment, you know, like the moment you're in or the city you're in. But I don't think it probably ever loses its potency. Maybe just, I don't know. I'll let you know in like 20 years.
Tell me about going to Eau Claire to make this. You touched on this a little bit. How important was it to have like the right space and the right person and people to surround yourself with for this?
The whole recording process was just so like serendipitous and providential. Like I didn't even know what I needed was there in Eau Claire. I had a couple producers that I was interested in working with, And a friend of mine who was helping me figure out how to reach out to people and contact people. And I contacted a handful. One of them was in here, like in Boulder, not very far away. One was in Seattle and one was in Eau Claire, the three that I was down to. And I was like, man, if I'm really having to choose, like, I don't really want to stay here in Colorado. I feel like I want to like go somewhere. Like it needed to be like a pilgrimage of sorts or like a journey. And there was something about that, like, lore of like the wooded nature of Eau Claire and it just feeling, like I said, more organic, that I just was really drawn to that idea. My husband and I and my then 1.5-year-old, we took our school bus that we had renovated and we drove it across the country and parked the school bus outside of the studio in the grass and lived there for a couple weeks while we made the record and made it with, this is at Brian Joseph's studios that he's worked with, like Bon Iver and Sufjan Stevens and such. And I had heard things he'd worked on, but I was like mostly just trusting word of mouth and being like, I had talked to him on FaceTime and I really liked him as a person. And he really liked my songs that I sent through. And like, that's really all I knew. I was like, I don't know what this is going to be like. I'm just showing up with my guitars and my like book of songs I've written. And he was going to put together the artists, the band to play with. And he is such a like thoughtful person and just very in tune with like, I don't know. He's just, you know, he'll close his eyes and really tune into a moment and then like gather his thoughts and then share what he thinks. And he was basing the band, not just off of their artistry, but also off of their like personality and what they bring to a room. And he was just like a master curator, you know? So he curated like the vibe of all the people. So once they were all together, it just like felt right. Like, I don't know these people and yet something feels right here. I feel like I know them and I trust them and I'm going to like share this heaviness with them. And then he was just really great at caretaking for me and curating, you know, like some songs he would just walk through and close all of the curtains and light a bunch of candles and just be like curating my emotions. Yeah, it was just really, really, really special and not at all what I like even knew I needed for this. But by the end was just like he was just created such a beautiful vessel for me to like send this thing off.
So how did you find any sense of levity in all of this?
I think it helps that I, as a person, am not overly serious, however much this is like a serious conversation that we're having. I do have a tendency to be able to like stay quite light as a person. So that helps. Also having a 1.5-year-old really brings you back to the earth pretty fast. So when recording, you know, like you leave the day's session and then I'm mom again and I'm having to figure that out. And we would have these big family meals at the end of each day recording where my husband would make like a bunch of food and we would all get around the table and like share wine and food and chat and listen to a record that somebody was loving. And that was really like medicinal too. Like after a heavy day of spilling all my guts out, having moments like that, or like little things like Brian's place is near the river and we would like go down and take our shoes off and put our feet in the cold water, or just little things that kind of just bring you back to the moment rather than the subject matter you're covering.
I think that's also one of those things too in dealing with kind of weighty things is learning like what the, like, yes, I'm sad and I have this emptiness now, but like, what's the next thing? So if I can't connect with this person any longer, I've got to find ways to connect with other people and begin writing a story with them, you know?
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, everybody lives every day with a little bit of sadness or grief in them. And it is just a matter of figuring out the balance of that, how much of that you bring with you into every moment. Yeah, it's tricky.
So has your mom heard the record?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The last people to hear it were my grandparents. And there's one song in it called Family where I like name off each one of my family members and like say what they're like what they're struggling with, you know. So that song I was really like self-conscious about. But yeah, I think even in all of this, I think my biggest motivator was for my family to hear it. Because I think that feeling, I don't know if you've ever had this feeling, but like when we lost my uncle, we all were just like shell-shocked and just going through it. And then, you know, my uncle lives in New York. Nobody around us has ever met him. At least barely anybody has. And so then we go into our everyday and people are kind of like, oh yeah, that's right, you're sad. I forgot about that. But like nobody gets it. And so then you're in this weird place of being like, yeah, but it's not just sad. It's like, this is why it's sad. And like, and it's not just this. It's like 5 years of this, you know? And you're trying to like, I just felt like I was just word vomiting on people, trying to like justify this grief that we were all carrying and like justify why it seemed like it was so intense. And I think a lot of that is what also spurred me onto writing was just like I wanted to feel justified in this for my family. I wanted us to people to listen to it and be like, oh, got it. You know, I don't know if that will happen, but it at least let me feel like I got to say my piece.
So you're going to go out and live with this for a while. The audience is going to start hearing it. Do you know what you're going to do next musically, or you just got to live with this for a little while longer?
I've been thinking about it. I have a few songs in my back pocket that I've been working on, and I'm starting to get a bit of a fuzzy shape for what my next chapter will be. But this record has been such a labor of love and just taking my whole being that I haven't thought too much about the next music I'll be making. I'm really fixated right now on trying to create a live experience and a show that is kind of immersive and engaging in a different way. I saw a Feist show a couple of years ago that kind of just changed my life. It was amazing. She was playing here in Denver and I'd always wanted to see her, so I just bought tickets kind of blindly. And she was playing at the Buell Theater, which is like a more of a symphony kind of musical theater concert hall type venue. And I was like, that's weird. I've never seen like a contemporary artist there, but sure. And we showed up and all of the door people were ushering us to the backstage and then onto the stage behind the closed curtain. And that's where the entire show took place, was like behind the velvet curtain on the stage. And she just did this beautiful, like really immersive show where there was like live video happening that was also being projected and like live green screen stuff. And then at the end of the show, the curtain, she could leave stage, the curtain opens up, and we all kind of turn around and she's up in the audience and we're on the stage and she's performing. Like the whole thing was just so like creative and like showed me how to feel about each song without telling me what it was about. Like it like guided me through. And I just loved that. And I'd love to find a way to guide people through this story, in a live setting.
You've been listening to a conversation with singer-songwriter Holly Lovell. Her latest album is Hello Chelsea and is out February 7th. You can learn more about her at hollylovell.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast at kmuw.org, and we do welcome your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Each morning, It's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.